You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Fluoride is under discussion in Cathlamet, Washington. The addition of fluoride to tap water systems was considered a major public health achievement. The mineral strengthens teeth and helps reduce the risk of cavities. The Wekiakum Public Utilities District has used fluoride in its water systems for decades. A consolidation agreement transferred ownership and management of Cathlamet's water to the district last year. Since then, Dan Kay, the PUD's general manager, says some residents have asked about removing fluoride from the water. The district is circulating a survey now to collect feedback from the community. Kay says the matter is ultimately a local decision, though fluoride is required currently by the PUD's permit. District commissioners have held one public hearing on the matter already. A second public hearing about fluoridation is set for April 7th at 8:30 a.m. The meeting will be held in the PUD's meeting room at 45 River Street in Cathlamet and also on Zoom. For information about remote attendance, contact the district at 360-795-3266 or go to the district's website. The district commissioners plan to bring a resolution in May to either maintain the status quo or discontinue adding fluoride to the Cathlamet water system. A vote could take place as early as the commissioners' first meeting in June. Some information in this story comes to us from the Wekiakum County Eagle, online at waheagle.com. This session, State Representative Deborah LeCanoff got one of six bills passed that she put forward, related to tribal sovereignty and treaty rights. The Democrat from Anacortes, Washington, says she'll keep pressing on. More from KNKX environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe.
LeCanoff says the measure that passed will wipe state statutes clean of an unenforceable voter initiative from 1984. It sought to block tribal fishing rights after the Bolt decision. She says this one victory might seem small, but it represents progress.
I knew some of them were the beginning of a conversation that allowed me to lean into leadership to say these are priority areas where we can help.
LeCanoff is an Alaska native. She's especially excited about the measures she put forward related to fishing rights and salmon, which she calls the essence of Washingtonians and of our tribes.
If you have a healthy salmon, you have a healthy environment, cool and clean water, healthy ecosystems, strong social structures, incredible strength in the economy.
One of her biggest priorities next session will be the creation of a statewide salmon commission. I'm Bellamy Palethorpe reporting.
The Cayuse, Umatilla, and Walla Walla tribes view their traditional food as something that deserves the utmost respect. So they're working to save food from the dump. NWPB's senior correspondent Anna King has this story about how these Northwest tribes are striving to repurpose their food waste.
Colleen Sanders pops a 5-gallon bucket. Inside, decomposing food waste, she digs in with both hands. We're on the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation in Northeast Oregon.
So you can see we have, you know, fry bread that somebody didn't want to eat. We have some meat that people didn't want, lots of bread. And there it is. There's some celery. There's some of our beautiful sister.
These Columbia Plateau tribes believe they return to the earth when they die, and that foods like wild celery and salmon are their relatives coming back. So this food is sacred. Sanders is the co-director of this food waste project called Nikiawe, Don't Throw It Away, for the Confederated Tribes. She says with food waste,
we are looking at the decomposition, and so it's inherently, you know, the idea of death and transition, which makes people uncomfortable a lot of the time.
In 2024, the Confederated Tribes got a U.S. Department of Agriculture grant to get started. This Bokashi fermenting system, what Sanders is digging through, is one way they're addressing food waste. It uses bran to break down the food and create nutrient-rich soil. DRC Abraham is the project's contractor. Abraham says seeing people engage with the food waste program is really exciting and rewarding. And
understanding the importance of diverting food waste, it makes me happy, and it makes me feel like my work that I put into it is worth it.
In about a year, the tribe's food waste recovery initiatives have already diverted about 2 metric tons of the stuff. All that waste used to go into the landfill. Now, the soil they create goes into local people's gardens. And there's so much recovered food waste that there's too much of it to process. Winter temperatures mean the food breaks down more slowly. Even chickens are eating some of the highest quality food waste. We're here at Culture Night, a weekly program held throughout the school year at the Mission Longhouse. 7-year-old Quinn French is learning to take care of her food waste. She plays a game called Recover Our Resources. It challenges children to pick the correct place for each type of food waste. Now, she gets a prize.
I like slime, but my parents wouldn't like it because we have carpet.
Kathleen Elliott brings Quinn here nearly every Wednesday. She's her grandma.
This is what grandparents do. For my grandmother taught me how to take care of the land and take care of ourselves also. And so I'm just doing what my grandmother did.
Ultimately, Elliott says she wants Quinn to learn how to take care of the food and land like she did years ago. Elliott says we're all here to take care of the earth. In Mission, Oregon, I'm Anna King.
Washington is trying to modernize the state's electrical grid by connecting it to clean energy sources. Governor Bob Ferguson signed legislation on Monday creating a statewide transmission authority to promote and finance new power lines and other infrastructure. Idaho and several other western states have similar agencies. Natalie Manitius from the Clean Air Task Force says the agency will help producers of energy from renewable sources.
They can develop transmission lines that will directly lead to areas where new clean energy generation is being built, like wind and solar in central Washington, where we don't really have transmission lines running there already.
Manitius says the new agency will likely work closely with the regional Bonneville Power Administration, which owns and operates much of the Northwest power grid. But it will also work with private companies and utilities to help them build more transmission infrastructure. As U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran enter a second month, the Jewish holiday of Passover begins this week. Rabbi Tamar Molino of Spokane's Temple Beth Shalom says even though Passover is a celebration, the war will be on the minds of many.
I think people are struggling. It's a hard time. And the holiday of Passover is primarily a story of hope and freedom. And I hope that it will give a lot of us a lot of encouragement to think how the future can be better than it is now.
Iran is home to one of the largest Middle Eastern Jewish populations outside of Israel. But the Iranian state has cracked down on residents speaking with foreign media. Passover begins this evening when families gather for a ritual feast called Seder. They'll celebrate recalling the Jewish exodus from Egyptian slavery. The holiday concludes April 9th. You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. Cruise ships will begin arriving in Astoria again starting on April 9th. The ship will be the first of a dozen scheduled visits this season, expected to bring an estimated 28,000 passengers through Astoria, an increase from last year. The busiest day this season will be on May 1st, when 2 ships are scheduled to dock, potentially delivering nearly 7,000 passengers in a single day, a surge that is only several thousand people short of the city's population. While not all passengers disembark, cruise ship days are marked by extra foot traffic through the city and more crowds at some locations like the Columbia River Maritime Museum and other landmarks. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. Amazon will pay about $20 million to settle its part of a lawsuit about nitrate pollution in eastern Oregon. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
Six residents of Umatilla and Morrow counties are suing food processors and industrial companies over groundwater pollution. Many of these companies use fertilizers that can seep into the earth, polluting underground water with nitrates. High levels of nitrates can harm infants and cause cancer. Amazon doesn't use fertilizer, but it does use local water. That water flows through its data centers so its servers don't overheat as they process massive amounts of data. As that water evaporates, it can leave behind higher concentrations of whatever was already there, like nitrates. The legal complaint accuses Amazon of worsening nitrate levels in the local groundwater. Amazon denies the allegations. Still, it has agreed to pay into a fund that will help improve water infrastructure. The lawsuit is continuing against the other industrial companies. I'm April Ehrlich reporting.
Deschutes County is among a group of three Oregon counties covered by a recent drought emergency declaration from Governor Tina Kotek. KLCC's Zach Ziegler reports.
The executive order is the first drought emergency declared this year and covers Deschutes, Umatilla, and Baker counties. Oregon Department of Water Resources hydrologist Cameron Greenwood says these conditions are linked to this year's poor snowpack.
That just below normal precipitation, the above normal temperatures coupled together really didn't provide much relief with respect to drought conditions across much of the state.
The declaration allows state agencies to coordinate relief efforts as needed. The last drought emergency in Deschutes County happened in 2023, and Umatilla hasn't been in one since 2021. Baker County was in a drought emergency last year. I'm Zach Ziegler reporting.
A new workforce development program in Eugene is teaching people living in shelters how to become bicycle mechanics. KLCC's Macy Moore spoke with program organizers and participants about Pedal Forward.
Delanya Clarkson rides bikes, but has never had the chance to learn more about how they function.
Now I can change a tire. I can fix brake pads. I can do a drivetrain. I can do stuff.
Pedal Forward aims to give more people living in shelters across Eugene the same learning experience as Clarkson. The program was created by Shift Community Cycles, a used bicycle shop and maintenance center. Executive Director of Shift Community Cycles, Kenzie Channing, wanted to better engage with other organizations in Eugene while finding more employees to work summer bike repair pop-ups. While touring community-supported shelters, a community housing nonprofit in Eugene, Channing mentioned her idea for a bicycle mechanic workforce development program.
And just mentioned this crazy idea that I had of, do you have folks who would be interested in learning bike mechanics?
Channing's idea coincided with a workforce development program already established at community-supported shelters. People living in shelters are able to work with staff to apply for part-time paid positions at the shelter and receive employment support that can lead to a full-time job. Anna Alkin, the program director for community-supported shelters, says they have been looking for more job training opportunities where people can learn skills outside of shelter operations.
One of the needs that we keep identifying are for programs that have employment tracks and training that also just suit the interests and the needs of our population base. And I really didn't have anything that was in the bike realm for sure. And I have a lot of people who ride bikes.
Alkin says she had people requesting to learn bike maintenance. So collaborating with Shift Community Cycles was a perfect fit. Through funding from the Chamber of Commerce, eight people from shelters across Eugene have been selected to participate in Pedal Forward. This first cohort is halfway through their training sessions, receiving hands-on instruction from bike mechanics. After completing training, the participants will work for Shift Community Cycles at their summer bike repair pop-ups to apply skills in the field. Channing says the new field mechanic team will help Shift Community Cycles fix more bikes this summer and build connections with the cyclist community in Eugene.
And we're hoping that this year, by having a field team of trained mechanics be out in the community, sharing what Shift Community Cycles is and putting their skills to use, we can serve more people in the community.
Beyond helping Shift Community Cycles increase their services this summer, Pedal Forward is providing participants with a supportive community. Clarkson is now confident in not just her ability to fix and maintain bicycles, but in her ability to learn a new practical skill.
And I think it's cool because it's empowerment, number one, and it's really, it gives me a lot of self-esteem and the knowledge to be able to fix my own bike, you know, and to be able to do this by myself. And knowledge is never wrong.
Once participants finish working the seasonal repair pop-ups, Pedal Forward will connect them with local bike shops and bicycle manufacturers to find permanent employment. I'm Macy Moore, reporting.
Winter storm warnings are in effect this morning through Thursday evening for heavy snow in the Cascades. Passes in the northern, central, and southern Oregon Cascades could see snow accumulations of up to 20 inches, with wind gusts up to 40 miles per hour, according to the National Weather Service. The heaviest snow is expected in Marion, Linn, and Lane counties. Snowfall rates could exceed an inch per hour starting this afternoon. Low visibility and accumulating snow could make travel conditions difficult. Officials urge people to consider delaying travel over the Oregon Cascade passes until after the winter weather ends. Drier, warmer weather is expected to move in Friday. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to us by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. To send us a tip or story idea, email news1@kmun.org. That's news1@kmun.org. The American Democracy Minute is up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. The New Jersey Assembly advanced the John R. Lewis Voter Empowerment Act March 23rd on a 53-20 vote. If passed by the Senate and signed as expected, New Jersey would become the 10th state to pass a state voting rights act. California and eight other states have all passed bills to offset recent and anticipated U.S. Supreme Court decisions eroding the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The New Jersey bill would make municipalities violating the state or federal VRA subject to preclearance requirements, which the High Court neutralized in the federal VRA in Shelby County versus Holder. It also requires multilingual election materials if 2% or 100 or more of local voters speak a non-English language. To address racial gerrymandering discrimination, which recent high court decisions have made harder to prove under the federal VRA, New Jersey's bill would prohibit election officials from impairing majority-minority communities from electing the candidate of their choice. It also bans polling place policies or activities which would impede, deny, or abridge the right to vote. In the 1981 gubernatorial race, the New Jersey GOP infamously used armed off-duty police officers wearing National Ballot Security Task Force armbands to intimidate voters. We've linked to the text of this pro-voter bill at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN.